Good morning, honorable members and delegates from the Department of Military Veterans and Human Settlement. Let us start with our meeting. I hope everybody who's supposed to be here is here. We are supposed to get a joint briefing on the provision of housing to military veterans. I'm not sure as to what is your agreement with DG, who's going to start.
Chair, what we've agreed is that, I will do the presentation then we will jointly answer questions and responses.
Thank you very much. Can you just start?
All right. Chairperson, let me first start just with introducing the colleagues that are here. From DMV side, I'm accompanied by CFO, Ms. Ndlovu, Ms. Maslodi, the director in my office, and Mr. Rampele, who is our director of planning, and Mr. Moringa, who the deputy director dealing with the housing issue in SIF. Their apologies from DDG Mafu, DDG Make, who are sick, as well as acting DDG Musi, who's also sick. Acting DDG Musi being acting DDG in SIF, which actually deals with the housing program. And then maybe Mr. DDG Gianni could just introduce the colleagues from UNICEF.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. My name is William Chian from the Department of Human Settlements. I head strategy and planning. I am together with colleagues, but Mili Lex, right on the page, Mili Zakhara is parliamentary officer here in Cape Town, accompanied by Swazi Taita in the Minister's office. And
thanks, Mr. Gianni. Chair, you have two documents before you, but the presentation we're going to make is the one that's headed presentation as is written there. The second one is from DHS. And it's actually similar to a presentation they've done to the NCOP committee, an NCOP committee. So it's more for information for members, and it's, I think it backs up with some more detail some of the issues that we raised. Chair, if we go to the second slide, the purpose is to brief the portfolio committee on the provision of the housing benefit to military veterans in accordance with the Act. On the third slide, that outlines the presentation, the third slide. And then if we look at the introduction, which is the next slide. Next one. Okay. The housing assistance program is administered jointly between DMV and the National Department of Human Settlement in terms of an MOU. And then DMV also has service level agreements with all the provincial departments. And although they are signed individually with the provincial departments, the contents of those SLAs are all the same. I'll come in a moment to the responsibilities outlined in the SLAs. The program is to provide housing assistance to indigent military veterans in terms of the regulations, the military veteran benefit regulations, and also to settle mortgage loans of military veterans, also in terms of the benefit regulations. The regulations cover those two areas. Then if we look at the agreements, the MOUs and the SLAs together, we have three parties, as I said, DMV, the National Department of Human Settlements, and the Provincial Departments of Human Settlements. So the role of DMV is to identify military veterans eligible for housing assistance, provide the National Department of Human Settlements and the Provincial Department with a list of beneficiaries. Once the units are completed, to pay the top-up for the units. Also, once the units are completed, the units are by and large built by the Provincial Department. So their obligation is to then hand over the completed units to DMV, and then DMV needs to verify that the units meet the specifications, and then hand over the completed units to beneficiaries. The National Department is responsible for overseeing the project implementation across the country, for creating housing sector skills for military veterans, and to assist military veterans with housing-related difficulties on the merits of each case. And then the provincial departments are responsible to build the houses according to the national specifications, build DMV for the number of units built, hand over the completed houses to DMV, who then allocate the houses to the beneficiaries. From DMV side, as you know, the issue of the allocation of the houses and who the beneficiaries are is a really key issue in this whole program. And essentially, in terms of these agreements, that's DMV's responsibility. Obviously, we do it together with SANVA and together with DHS, the municipality, the provincial departments. But in the end, it's DMV's responsibility to deal with the allocation and then handing over the houses to the beneficiaries. If we look at the criteria to receive a benefit, the housing benefit, these come from the military benefits regulation, military veteran benefit regulation. A military veteran qualifies for housing if they are registered on the DMV database as military veterans. And let me just clarify, the Act says that it lists the 11 benefits, and it lists which ones are for veterans and which ones are for veterans and dependents. Housing is listed as a benefit for veterans only at the moment, which does create some complications. Maybe we'll talk later about that. But that's one of the things we need to look at as we changing the Act. So you need to be the veteran needs to be registered on the database. They must be unemployed or receiving a pension. If they are employed, the income must be below 125,000 per annum. That's the current amount in the regulation. But in that calculation, the income earned by a spouse is not combined with the military veteran income to do the calculation. Must not own a house. This also creates complications for us, because many military veterans who are destitute are still registered as the owner of a house. And when you get into each individual case, there are all kinds of individual complications. But quite a common one is that the military veteran left the country. Whilst they had left, the house was transferred into their name by the family because the parents had passed away, and then it's still registered in their name, even though they might not be living in the house or might be desperate, or the family might have lost the house. So that one also creates complications, and hasn't received a housing subsidy from the state in the past. then if we look at the next slide, it shows the process flow of the allocation of the houses and then the building of the houses. The first block at the top left, it's a kind of rounded one. DMV proactively identifies the beneficiary using database profiles. All military veterans approach DMV with housing requests or stakeholder refers cases. So basically, the lists we've drawn up come from our own desktop analysis, from veterans approaching the department, or stakeholders such as FUNBA approaching the department. Okay. Then DMV is meant to pre-screen the beneficiaries and create a database, a housing needs database, which is broken up into provinces. The database is then given to the National Department of Human Settlements for loading onto the their human settlements system and is shared with SANBA. Then the National Department shares the database with the Provincial Departments of Human Settlements. The Provincial Departments initiate new projects, and then based on the database, they allocate houses in those projects to military veterans. So that allocation of houses might be on existing projects or new projects they start. Then DMV and the Provincial Department convene stakeholders in the province, essentially SANBA and the Military Veterans Association, where the Provincial Department shares its intention to build houses for identified military veterans. Then the stakeholders are provided with a database of the identified beneficiaries for input. They can add military veterans to a list out, and DMV can consider those that are left out of the project. Once consensus is reached with the stakeholders, the provincial department invites the beneficiaries to complete the housing subsidy form. Those forms are then captured and processed. Then they build the houses, the provincial department, and provide quarterly reports on the construction status. Then the provincial department informs DMV that the houses are completed and ready for allocation, and invoices DMV for the top-up amount. DMV must then verify the house complies with the standards, hand over the house to the approved beneficiary, and settle the invoice. Colleagues, you'll understand that's the ideal system of how it should be functioning. If we look at the current housing needs database, DMV started in October 2015 to establish the database. 21,411 potential housing beneficiaries were considered. That list of the 21,000 comprises 16,800 NSF members, plus 4,611 former statutory force members who had requested housing assistance. These beneficiaries were pre-screened and with the assistance of the National Department to see whether they are eligible in terms of the military veteran benefit regulation. In other words, whether they qualify in terms of the income. The pre-screening is done on the housing subsidy system jointly by DMV and Human Settlements. And in doing that, they were checked against the National Housing Subsidy database to check whether they've received the benefit before. PERSOL, which is the military personal information system, UIF to see if they're employed, the population register, and the deeds office to check if they previously owned a house. Then from the screening, 16,421 were disqualified, and the reasons for the disqualification are listed there. 5,772 were deceased, 844 had invalid IDs, they weren't on the population register. 6,336 had title deeds. 2,931 had received subsidies, and 538 were earning more than the 125,000 per annum cutoff. Okay. Then 4,990 pre-qualified, and of those, 67% were former NSF members, and 33% were former statutory force members. And then there's a bit of a provincial breakdown. Of the 4,990, Gauteng had the largest number of beneficiaries, 1,020. Eastern Cape had the second largest, 631. KZN the third largest, 411. And Mpumalanga had the lowest number, 140. The full data with the breakdown per force and per province is on the next table. You can see the grand totals for each of the forces and the provinces there. The 4,990 is the overall list of veterans that we have at the moment that needed to be provided with housing. However, for this year, we gave the National Department of Human Settlements a list of 1,421 military veterans to be provided with houses in this year. So although our target in the APP is 1,000, we would actually like to see the target being 1,421. The next slide shows the performance in terms of delivery of houses versus targets starting in 2013-14 financial year and going up to the second quarter of this financial year. So you can see at times the targets have been high in the red line, going up to 2,112 in the last financial year, but the number of houses delivered is very low in comparison, and although the graph doesn't show it clearly, it has moved from 2 and 0 in 2014-15 to 130 in 15-16, 116 in the last financial year, and then in the first 2 months of this financial year, we've actually delivered 158. So we've essentially, first 2 quarters of this financial year, we've delivered almost the same number that we delivered in the whole of last year. Okay? And then the breakdown by province is there, which can be compared to that previous table, you'll see that over the 4 financial years, the province that has built the most houses is Gauteng, followed by Mpumalanga, followed by Eastern Cape. If we then look at the challenges in delivering houses, the first challenge is that the lists that we have drawn up are disputed by some associations. And Chair, let me say that the issue of the lists continues to be an issue all the time. We had, at the beginning of the year, in the beginning of the calendar year in February, provided SANBA with the 1421 list. We don't have a formal comment from SANBA on that list. We had asked them to discuss it with their provinces. We don't have any formal communication back from SANBA on the list, and that creates a problem. But also when we deal with individual projects in provinces, we continue to find issues with the list. And in some cases, in Lukanji and Lufereng, there's been invasion of houses that were built by veterans who are contesting the list. And both of those invasions are not resolved. In both cases, we've engaged with those invading, with SANBA leadership, both national and provincial, but we haven't been able to resolve the issue. In the Lukanji case, Sanva, which is in Queenstown, in that case, Sanva actually told us formally in a meeting that they're stepping back from this process, and the process of the list is going to be dealt with by an action committee that was established by the invaders. We were there together with Sanva in the meeting. Then at a later time, they say, no, Sanva is back dealing with the issue. But it creates serious problems and puts us in a difficult situation of resolving the issues. The other problem we have with lists, for instance, we handed over houses in Tata 2 weeks ago. The problem there is that the majority of the houses are going to former statutory force members, in that case TDF members, where there are still a large number of non-statutory force members who don't have houses, some of whom even came to the handover ceremony. And that creates a problem, and again, it's difficult to get Sanva on the ground to accept the direction that is coming from both departments and ministries about the need to prioritize non-statutory force members. Some of the other problems we've seen have to do with amongst the non-statutory force members who gets allocated housing. In many of the projects on the list, there are military veterans who were born in 74, 75, 76. And if you do the calculation, if you're born in 75, it means you were 15 in 1990. And in those areas, we know of a large number of military veterans who are much older. For instance, if you talk about former MK members, members of the Junior 16th Detachment, who are all in their 60s at the moment, are not allocated houses, but you have other space. And one of the difficulties we have in that process is that these things get consulted by the different stakeholders. And in the case I'm thinking about, you have the councillor there, you have the MMC for housing or human settlements in the municipality, you have the provincial department, national department human settlements, DMV there. And that process then creates a set of lists like that. However, I find it difficult to sign off a list which has that composition. So I need to then, in a way, restart the consultative process. So that's something we try to deal with at the moment. Other problems, to go back to the slide, are beneficiaries not residing near housing projects. For instance, in the Lukanji case, because they at that when it was started, the project was one of the few projects for military veterans in the, that part of the Eastern Cape. Beneficiaries included people living as far away as in the former Transkei areas, rural areas, distant from Queenstown, etc. So the whole issue of where veterans are allocated housing is actually becoming more and more important, even within cities or small provinces. That's something that we have to continue to look at. For instance, we have veterans from the kind of greater Soweto area who are being allocated houses in the projects that are in the Vaal, like Savannah City, Golden Gardens. And the distance might not be that far, noble SO, if you're used to the Western Cape distances, but veterans literally don't want to be moved 30, 40 kilometers away from where they've been living. But we don't have other projects to fit them in, so that also creates a problem. Some veterans are not on the list. This largely has to do with veterans who are not on the database. And they still remain, whatever we've tried to do, they still remain veterans, including real people who would be verified as military veterans, who are not on the ground today. Pre-qualified beneficiaries still get rejected when they complete subsidy forms in the provinces. Part of what you'll see we've been trying to do with that is to have a system of overriding when people are rejected on the HSS system. Details of military veterans are incomplete or they're untraceable. The incidents of invasions, like I mentioned, Lufereng, Nelmafia's, Lukanji. Sanba not signing off the beneficiary list. I've mentioned that. Municipalities not installing bulk infrastructure. For instance, in Nelmafia's, which is in Tswane, houses were built. The houses were completed in January. But when they were built, they didn't have electricity and water. Then later the water was provided, but they still don't have electricity. But the house is essentially completed. So a similar problem with electricity was experienced in Kimberley with the project there. So and that those problems are largely problems of the municipalities, which the municipalities must provide the bulk infrastructure. Okay, resolving these problems, there has been a national circular drafted and sent to the provinces looking at how to manage rejection cases when people don't meet the criteria. We've tried to establish provincial steering committees to do dispute resolution. The provincial departments have been given the authority to deal with overrides on the HSS system. The DMV and DHS have mapped the beneficiaries and located them near active housing projects. You'll see in the other presentation from DHS that there's some of the maps of some of the provinces and the country showing the mapping of veterans to projects, but more work needs to be done on finalizing that, and also getting military veterans to accept the projects that they're going to be allocated in. And then we are meant to have a media campaign targeting military veterans that have incomplete records and untraceable, so they can update their records. And then to conclude, Chairperson, the provision of housing assistance is currently based on prioritizing housing provision to non-statutory force members, maintaining a single housing needs database through DMV, the need to accelerate housing provisioning in all provinces, and to improve the cooperation with the Military Veterans Association. In this financial year, we've been trying to get the provinces to allocate DNG houses to military veterans where there are desperate needs. And the intention of this is to house military veterans who are on the streets. So we would, in many cases, it's a struggle to build the houses to the military veterans' housing specifications. So what we've agreed with DHS is that we will, and we've been engaging with the Military Veterans Associations on this, that we will allocate veterans a B&G house.
What is B&G?
Building new ground house.
Breaking new ground house.
But that's the standard house that DHS provides to ordinary citizens. Okay. It's a 40 square meter house. Our specification is 50 square meters. So then the intention was to provide those houses as quickly as possible, but then to have a process to upgrade the house to our specification, or have some other process with the beneficiary that they could use the money that's allocated for the upgrade to do something else what they want to do in the house. So that was the intention. It's a way of speeding up the process. As I said, the 1421 houses houses were to be prioritized for the non-statutory force of military veterans. We're trying to encourage the provincial departments to adhere to the approved floor plan. So either they build the military veteran specification house of 50 square meters or they build a BNG house of 40 square meters and we upgrade it through some process. But we still have some provinces which are building much bigger houses. And we were discussing this morning, some of those provinces are now facing severe problems of funding because they've spent more money than allocated on a larger house, so they can only produce less houses. So that, that remains a problem. And I think both the National Department of Human Settlements and DMV are at one that it creates more problems than it solves. We must stick to the standards that are agreed. Provincial departments are requested to report and invoice DMV for built and allocated houses. And then we need from DMV side to be improving the monitoring and the evaluation of projects. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. By the way, you said the this is an integrated presentation. It is indeed integrated. It will tell us what agreements you have with the Department of Human Settlement, you are how you operate, and so on. Honorable members, any comments, clarification?
And because some of the questions were properly opened up. But we have questions.
No, you must ask questions. Honorable Dambuza.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and I wish to thank the presentation from the representatives of the joint report. Chair, I think most my questions, I think that most of them have been responded in the last slide where I had a problem on the issue of the beneficiaries that are located somewhere and then they live somewhere. But I think they have tried to solve it because it has to be dealt with during the planning processes to I look to identify where are these the beneficiaries are residing. So it's a provincial problem, but seemingly it's being addressed here. But I want to check from the delegation watching in terms of assisting the outstanding amounts on the mortgages. Do we have that such situations, and then what how far have they gone to address that one? And then the issue of the Samba being approving the list. I know it's a decision that was taken, but I want to check from the department now. Do they think now is still relevant? Are there any other means they can think of? Because it means, you know, I've got an experience even in the local government here. If you say you have got so many people who are bringing the list to the local council, I remember before it was saying the rich, what do you call those people? Churches and so on, NGOs and so on, they might bring. Now you'll find that they say the ward councillor. I'm just citing an example check. So you'll find that in the community, those people, there are conflicts amongst themselves. So they will bring whatever, even the local councillor himself. So that is why it is important for the local municipality to, when they are doing with this process, it must be done through the official of the local municipality. So I'm just citing on this now, on the military veteran. Is there any other means other than buying these military veterans? Because if these people are registered, they are here, they appear in the register, the national register. So why can't they can be checked? Because now, seemingly there is a challenge. I don't know. I don't get it, Chairperson. But I would like to get from the acting DG. So that we address this problem. Then the other issue is the issue of this overriding, or it has been responded in the last. The issue of bulk infrastructure is a critical problem, Chair. I think it has to be done. I mean, the Department of Human Settlement has to monitor this, because the houses should not be built in areas where the infrastructure has not been addressed. So I think the department, it is the responsibility of the Department of Human Settlements to ensure that the municipalities, once the area has been identified for this project, at least the municipality must also come into party that those houses must be built in a correct manner. The issue of I know you are going to take all this. The systems are there. My comment is that the systems are there, the mechanisms of delivery, from starting from the responsibilities that have been allocated and so on and so on. But I want to check how many military veterans that have been trained, so that we should be able to assist in the provision, delivery of houses. So if you can get the number. So I think this one on slide that is talking about the military veterans housing processes flow and so on and so on, it has got to do with prioritizing. If each department, both departments can ensure that when the Department of Human Settlement, in fact, when they receive this 1,000, let me cite an example, they receive 1,000 for the whole country. So in their prioritization, do they really prioritize now the housing for these military veterans in their prioritization, or they just put the list? But you need to prioritize it to say, if we are allocating 200 in Eastern Cape, so in these 200, we must ensure that there is a number of veterans that has been in that priority. Not just put them into a list, but in terms of prioritizing them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member. You're welcome, Honorable Marie. Honorable Issao.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Okay, good morning to everybody. I just want to check for the policy on housing. Of course, we haven't seen the actual policy. And all the issues that were raised as criteria for housing qualifications, are they actually now in the policy, and has the policy been approved by the minister? Has the policy now gone through the whole process, which is actually a document you can use and rely upon? If it is so, then we are saying that the means test is pitched at less as those who earn 125,000 and less that would qualify for a house. Those, of course, who are unemployed, they don't have money, and those who are on pension will earn much less, so they automatically would qualify in terms of a means test. We want to establish if those things are actually in the policy, one. Two, the other one is the issue of past ownership, I think the issues were raised. Those issues are not very clear from what we get the communication from the department, where people, houses, as indicated by the acting DJ, were repossessed, which means they don't actually own the house. It was on their name, but the bank is actually the owner. When the bank repo, your name stays behind, but you, there's no house. It's actually with the bank. In those instances, would that be a consideration for a person to reapply for a house? In a situation where somebody has a house and it's repossessed not because of lack of payment, the person actually settled the house and it was, he used the house as a collateral and it was then repossessed because he couldn't pay off a debt or excess bond that he took on the house and which is not the primary bond, which is a very distinct difference that you had a home but you used your home for other purposes. So those issues are not really clear to me. That's the other one. When we also speak about the top-up, we speak about 78,000. Now there's been two litigation cases, Mbana and another case, where 175,000 was paid out to each litigant because they claim that the department is responsible for the full amount of 188,000, and the court ruled in their favor. So the issue was the settlement, of course, was on 175. And I'm asking now, if that is the top-up issue, is it a policy issue when RDP houses are being built by housing by settlements, human settlements, the department only adds on the 78,000 under all circumstances? Now, if that is the case, then those who claim in terms of top-up for their loans, which they've got a right because they own a house, they still owe money, do they qualify for the full amount of 188,000 or 78,000? And in instances, this department has paid out the 188,000. So there is no consistency in the policy of top-up with which the department is responsible for. This department has paid now the subsidy part as well as the top-up. So we just want to establish what is this actual situation and if that is very clear in the housing policy and if that policy is approved. The other one I want to ask is on the 4,990 approved, pre-approved. Now, we've looked at the processes, but within those processes, we realize that there are those who are also not on the database. There are those who qualify that are not on the database. Now, I want to know if they are not on the database and they qualify and they went through all these processes, but in the provinces, they were still allowed to register as MVs qualifying for a home. Did they apply and papers were submitted to the department and those papers were put in file number 30? It wasn't actually processed because it was a manual system and certain people manipulated or were negligent in their responsibility. Did they receive papers of those people that are qualifying for homes that are actually not on the database? So the other one also of prioritizing in terms of age, we know those who are much older, the chances and the also the health conditions are different to those who are much younger, and we can see that those who are getting the homes that are much younger, which is a big problem. Others have families, their families have grown, they've got far greater responsibilities, and the younger ones, of course, are getting homes. How is that? If it is not a policy, then that has that been introduced as a criteria as well? Because if it's not the policy, you can't apply it, then it's simply in terms of the normal criteria of the means test, etc. So those are the key issues I want to ask. Then I want to also note, we said 130 homes were built, and then again 168 homes were built last year. That added up to 298. On this chart, it indicates there were two years before that were handed over to the last of the World War veterans, I think, or some vets, the last two vets that were left. When that was back in 2014, 2015, that was handed over. Now that wasn't added in the total. Was it actually part of the DMV's responsibility, or was it one of the municipalities that actually granted a home to two military vets? And we're just simply adding it in here because, in terms of Section 6 of the Act, all housing that is built for military vets must be reported to this department. Similarly, we're asking the issue of Sedibeng and then Golden Garden, Savannah City, Are these part of the 1,421 roll out that we are looking at currently? Sedibeng has started the handover. There's been a delay on the gardens one, right now, last week and the week before. Is this part of the rollout? And there's also issues with Sedibeng. Sanlam was involved in this issue as well. There were also changes made to the list. Is the department okay with it, and what this was actually used by these municipalities to actually allocate housing? And there were houses not indicated on here delivered in the Western Cape, and that was in Blue Downs. Where are those houses? Are they part of this project or not? If they're not, they have to be reported, and it must be put also under category of military veterans that access homes by municipalities which they didn't actually pay for. So the other question, when I get to the chart, in fact, I'm looking at the chart that was given here, the performance chart. Now, I think DG has indicated we see the top up being paid over at 5.3 million. And we see there's 212 military veterans allocated, actual housing delivered 168. Now, if top-ups were paid out, it means that money is sitting with municipalities, or it's sitting with provincial departments, or it's sitting, I don't think it's transferred really to the national department, because that's only a MOU. The delivery agent or the implementing agent is the provinces or the municipalities. So what money is still sitting around? Like we had a problem with NASFAS, and that was settled only afterwards. What is the position on the money that was actually transferred and were not used for the housing? And if that is a problem, then of course we have to report it. We know issues of money not being used and returned to the fiscus and the problem. We don't want to lose money that is due to military veterans. So what measures have been put in place to secure that money that is rolled over and that it will actually be used for housing delivery? The issue of the targets that were set. The targets are set at 1,000. Of course, we know it was much bigger before. That's more realistic. We're looking at a delivery of 1,421. To date, we've got 158. That is the second term. We have two terms left. Can we deliver the balance of the 1,421 minus the 158? Is it realistic or is it not realistic? Then, of course, looking at the MTF period, we're looking at 5,000, and that commitment was made by our previous minister, Minister Sisulu. And of course, we had the adjustments to it that it was reduced to 1,000 per year. So is the target now MTF 3, or is it still going to remain at 5,000? And if so, is that realistic with the current service delivery that's taking place? I think also the other issues which we have to raise is the issue of local government, provincial governments, and the access to land. All land currently is prioritized for housing developments in the country. Now, what is the projected plans of where this land will become available, in terms also of locations of military veterans? Some of them have phoned and complained that they are being pushed very far from their homes, where they may have some casual or their family settled in school, their wife is doing this or somebody is doing that, and they can't move that distance, so they would lose the opportunity. So when we say we are mapping geographically the needs of military veterans, and then, of course, discussing with the local municipalities where housing schemes will be developed and that they constitute part of those housing schemes. What is the minimum? Can be anything. That is the maximum percentage of any housing scheme that is developed currently by municipalities or the provinces allocated for military veterans. And that will, of course, taper off because the military veterans are limited at this stage, and that backlog can be dealt with very quickly. And then it's a matter of just being part of the normal RDP housing developments that are taking place. As indicated, the top-up can be added even afterwards for expanding or improving the home as the tenant or the resident or the owner requires of that home. I'm also just asking the other question of the temporary shelter. Some of the military veterans are not qualifying or did qualify, but they are on a waiting list. They are currently facing evictions, they're currently living in shacks, they're currently on the streets. Is there any initiative for them to be accommodated in temporary shelters as part of local government or provincial government, so that at least they got a house or some shelter over their head that they can actually stay in and live in, and not also face that trauma on a daily basis? Has that also been a consideration by the department, and also of the MOU or SLAs that exist between the department and the other government departments? The other one I'd like to ask is also the issue of the design. I think that is always a problem, but there should be limited designs that people can choose from, and that's within the ambit of local government to be able, or provincial, to be able to implement. Otherwise, it should be a basic house and an extension that is done at the request of the owner, and how it should be done. The other one is the I've spoken about the targets. Also, there are other housing development models. We have stuck to the normal housing models that is delivered through municipalities and through provinces. Have we considered, and we've asked several times, that we got a works regiment run by military veterans? They also put in the tenders or contracts with the department. They are service providers. They can also build. There can be initiative of even a group of local MBs in an area where they can take responsibility even for their home. Like you have a self-help scheme. The basic is to get the property, to put down a foundation, and then you assist them to complete their own homes. And then it means that the value of the money they get, they can even build a better home or a bigger home with the same money, because they then absorb the labor cost and how much they want to earn from that labor cost for the total amount. That model has been put forward. It's never been pursued, and the alternative has never been pursued. So I'm asking, can that be a solution under the current circumstances where delivery is a serious challenge? The other one is, of course, in the policy of the deceased military veterans. They died for our country, or they were sick, they became old, they didn't receive benefits. The family remains behind. Does it mean because the allocation is now only for the military vet, and housing is a very fundamental right? Is that a consideration, that the families would still qualify for a home? Because unfortunately, if you die, you get absolutely nothing, except for the issue of education and maybe some training, that and some opportunity there. But the rest is, you just get a burial support of 25,000 for the family to pay the debt, and whatever is left, that is all you get as a family. So I want to know if that is also a consideration in the policy that is currently being used, and also the amendments that are being considered. I can see the joint task team, there's been improvement on that, and of course, it's supposed to facilitate the process. The issue I want to raise also of the verification. When SANVA abdicates their responsibility, because an action committee in a local area wants to take responsibility for the vetting of housing beneficiaries, when they take that responsibility, how does SANVA then take the responsibility to act as the umbrella body and to sign off, and refuses to sign off? So how can this department accept such an action committee's decision? And particularly if it's members that are actually beneficiaries, or their families are beneficiaries, then they are seriously compromised. A conflict of interests and vested interests. I don't think we can simply say we abdicate, they can make do what they want. That is not the solution, that is actually a problem. Because if they succeed there, it will set a very bad precedent in the rest of the country. The issue that we need to report back is also of all those veterans that are 35 years old or 1975 that they joined, some even joined, it was 1980 somewhat we got on the list. Where did they come from? Were they shooting toy guns? And I think we have to be frank. In fact, the report that we have with even the leaks of the emails and things, there was serious concern raised by MK members about those young people that are still being written up as part of the MK. The seniors have raised serious concern about it. And we've seen on many of these demonstrations and marches, very young MK soldiers in their uniforms marching. Where did they come from? Do we have a new youth league? Do we have a new young MK division? And this goes also for the other parties. Hazanla, for Apla, for all those lists that have now been reviewed again, where did these people come from? After 23 years, after it's been advertised so many times, and I think Acting DJ has indicated there needs to be a forensic audit, a clearly forensic audit, because some people are jumping on this bandwagon because it's a gravy train where you get money for free, mahala, mahala, everything is mahala. I think we need to stop this nonsense. Those who really sacrifice for our country, they deserve all our support. Those who didn't, they deserve to be dealt with, and they must pay back the money. So I think we must be very clear, we're not going to allow people to abuse the system. And therefore, I'm very concerned that we give responsibility to action committees where we have formal structures that must take responsibility. The other one is the invasions. There was also clear indication, not only in Dukanji and the others, but also in Durban. The 20 had also problems. And of the people that invaded, we put the question, the department said, we can't answer, you have to ask housing. I did send for housing, the same thing, I never got answers. Who are the people really that invaded? Were they really military veterans? Or were they pseudo-military veterans that were taking advantage of the situation? The other one I want to also indicate is the bulk infrastructure. I support my colleague. No development can take place unless local government has all the bulk infrastructure in place. And if it is province, local government is still responsible to ensure through its inspectorate and to make sure that the conditions for developments are complied to in terms of the laws of the different municipalities. So, it is unacceptable that any development can take place without infrastructure and bulk infrastructure. Access to electricity, that is one of the first things you do. Any investor, the private sector, before they buy a piece of land, where's the bulk infrastructure? What is the closest point? What is the extra cost to connect electricity from this point, water from that point, sewage from this point? Because that makes the development feasible. But is this how we treat those who are the downtrodden and disadvantaged in the community? Because you can just build any RDP house and put anybody anywhere. I think that goes against the whole spirit of this new democracy and of redress and of granting access and of creating equality. I think it goes contrary to that completely. So we fail in our duty, and municipalities would fail in their duty if they don't ensure that bulk infrastructure is in place before housing development is done in an area. Similarly, part of the regulations in this country is when you do that, you must also plan not only for a housing development, you must plan for a human settlement. That's why the name was changed, which means a school must be built there, clinic health services must be in place, recreational services must be in place. That is why we call it human settlements today. This is contrary to the whole name of the institution of human settlements. So we need to address the departments responsible for this. This is not the spirit that we're going to do things. It's a requirement that those arrangements are done before any development takes place, and people advise, because when they move into that house, how do their children get immunization? How do their children go to school? Is it again just the first guy that would jump into such projects would be our taxi associations, because that's the only transport that would be there. There's no other transport. So that is a major concern I have. I also want to ask exactly, we haven't seen the housing developments using military veterans and training. So when this is being stated here, that there should be a transfer of skill in housing developments, I would like to know where is that SLA for the employment of MVs to ensure that transfer skills take place. All these houses that have been built in the last 3 years now, has any MV been employed and skills transferred to that person so that he can use that maybe to find a more permanent job? We need to know that from the department, both departments, if there's such agreement, and if those people have been recruited and allocated to these projects. Honourable Chair, I think that's my first round. Thank you very much.
this battle ends with the first round.
That's a knockout.
TKO.
That's a knockout.
Honorable Gabriel.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. And I hope in this knockout you have counted and I stood up. I beat the count. Just for human settlement, the main concern for the committee, we normally deal with the military veteran committee. The main concern why we are here is because when you deal with issues, more especially about the provision of houses, is that it is not the competency of the Department of Military Veterans. Hence, then, we are all in one room today. So most of the issues, I'm sure, will follow up when you respond. So that was the main piece. But then to the DG, and generally to human settlement, the presentation says we've got about 21,000, we had about 21,000 military veterans. And we have lost about 5,700 that passed on. So to us, this number is decreasing, as we warned years before. This number is decreasing. And I'm sure when we made some budgets, we're looking at this figure. So now we have to minus this figure and say, so our budget is going to shrink because the number is not the same as before. Now, you know, I come from the school of arithmetic. Now I add figures. Of the 4,990 that pre-qualified, I try to reconcile that with the pre-screening results versus the housing delivery challenges, DG. That on the housing challenges, if those issues were on the pre-screening, so that you deal with those. People don't pre-qualify, and then if they go on with the process, they get kicked out. What is the pre-qualified? Just a matter of reconciling those two. And the issue of veterans not in the database is just for the clarification if they do have false numbers. Because if they do, they have false numbers, by virtue of false numbers, they are military veterans. They would qualify more than the younger veterans that are there. So just to clarify, if those do have false numbers or not. And to those who are disqualified, one challenge that we have with the department or as government is that we don't assist people that fail on. Now, if you can't make this, this is how you can make it. If you can't qualify, this is how you can qualify. I'm sure it's either the 844 that had invalid IDs. It was either criminal or by mistake. Did you make any attempt to assist those? If it was criminal, because it's a serious matter, charge them. If maybe there was something wrong with the IDs, then assist them so that they qualify. Now you try to explain that some were left houses by their parents, but still they were disqualified. What's the way forward on that particular group? Because clearly they never had houses, parents were going, now they had. Is there a plan B for those? And of those that received RTPs, I thought Honorable Issa would mention this as my spokesperson.
Oh, thank you.
How many are targeted for military veterans with disabilities? So, because they go there and they find that the house is not user-friendly.
Absolutely.
Now, of those that also received RDD houses, were those houses in their spouse's name or in their own name? And have you, what has been done to top up, as the department tops up on the RDP house, the amount, so that then they upgrade the houses? I'll stop there for a seventh round in the house.
Yeah. Honorable Sal must not take that to being your spokesperson serious, because you will get in trouble with your heart.
My work.
Okay. No, it's fine. Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we give the representatives an opportunity to respond, and you'll just supplement each other where you need to. Thank you very much. Mr. Ozinski.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the questions. Let me start and I'll indicate where others should assist. Honorable Dambuza asked about the outstanding amount on mortgages. Maybe let me just explain about policy, the Act, and regulations again. I think it will deal with a couple of questions, okay? Firstly, there's the Act, which you as Parliament passed, okay? And I think that answers the question about veterans and dependents, because the Act is very clear that housing is a benefit that's only for veterans. Now, that's one of the things we want to change in the draft amendment bill that we submitted. So we'd need your support for that. But whilst it's in the Act, there's little we can do about it, because the Act is law, and we can't break the law. So that must be clear at the moment. We can only provide to veterans themselves. I must say, it's a very complex thing. When you deal with the issues, it becomes even more complex. There's a case in point. One of the houses in Lufereng was built for a disabled veteran. It has disabled access. One of the 13 that were completed, if I'm right. Okay? Now, it was specifically built for that veteran because he's disabled. Okay? The house was occupied. Illegally occupied. It's still currently illegally occupied. Whilst in the middle of this process, that veteran has passed away 3 weeks ago, 3 or 4 weeks ago. Okay? Now, and his wife had passed away a week before he passed away. Okay? They were both in military hospital. We took them to one more when we realized their state. They were also, so now the problem we sit is, one, the house is occupied, but we feel the house should still go to the family.
It's allocated on the beneficiary list.
It's allocated on the beneficiary list, but the beneficiary has not received it yet because it's illegally occupied. I'm just showing you some of the issues that we actually deal with. So there's the Act, okay? Then there's the regulation. And the regulations have the detail about how to implement the Act, although the regulations are also deficient because they don't cover all cases. Okay? So we work in terms of the regulations. And then there's the policy of the department and the operating procedure of the department for the system. Now, the policy which we're busy with is our internal policy on this matter, which flows from the Act and the regulation. So I just wanted to correct you, Honourable SL, because you were talking about a policy signed off by the Minister. The policy is the responsibility of the department, and it needs to be signed by myself. Okay? And in the case of the housing policy, there's currently a policy guideline, which is not the same as a policy, but we're implementing the guideline. We've drawn up a draft policy. We've consulted on the policy with the Advisory Council and with SUNBA, and we are now looking at the comments of the Advisory Council and SUNBA on the draft policy to see which comments we will accept and which we will not implement. Okay? And so the next step is for myself to then respond in writing to them on that, and then to sign off on the policy, which would be the steps to be taken. So that will be done in a matter of weeks. We just, as I say, we've just got from the Advisory Council what their comments are, so we feel we need to respond to the comments, not just ignore that they made comments. So that's where we are. Okay? And then once the policy is in place, the SOP needs to be finalized so that we have a proper procedure. And I think one of the problems in DMV is that it doesn't have all those things in place for most benefits. It doesn't have policy. In some cases, we don't even have regulation. With regard to education, for instance, there's no regulation on civil issues. Okay? So that's the process we're following around that. So when we come to the issue of mortgages, Honourable Dambuza, you asked about it. The regulation is very clear on the process to be followed in analysing requests for mortgage assistance. Basically what the regulation says is that we can only pay off a bond or a mortgage if the outstanding amount is less than the benefit amount. So the outstanding amount on the bond must be less than 188,000 for us to authorise the payment. Okay? And the intention of that is that when we make the payment, that we then are assured the veteran has a house. Okay? The house can't be taken away because the bond is paid off. Okay? Now, most of our problems, we have, in the last financial year, rescued 104 bonds. Okay? But there are many, many more applications. And the problem with most of those applications is the outstanding amount is more than 188,000. And we are then stuck because of what the regulation says. And it's very difficult for us to deal with. Okay? So let me just answer that like that. But we do pay off if the outstanding amount is less. Honourable Dambuza also raised about Sanva agreeing on the list, whether that's still relevant. And you spoke about your experience in the council where that was handed over. That responsibility for this was handed over to officials. And in fact, I also feel that officials need to take most responsibility for the list. But the reason that we want buy-in from Sanva on the list is so when there are occupations or other disputes about the allocation, that Sanva then doesn't support those who are occupying illegally. So that we can say to Sanva, you've agreed to the list, you now can't 6 months later go and support an occupation. And it's a real problem. I mean, you know, also Sanva has different levels. You have national Sanva, province, region. There can be disputes between the region and province. And so this is very complex for us. And it's very, very difficult for us to deal with. But my view is the way of solving it is more engagement with Sanva, so that we get Sanva leadership starting at the top to all levels to understand where we go. But let me say that also, committee, you're aware of the problems that are existing in Sanva anyway, and that I think impinges on our ability to tighten in on these issues. Okay, the bulk infrastructure, I'll leave that to colleague Gianna. The question of military veterans being trained to assist with the delivery of housing, I don't have a number, we can come back to the committee on the number. But let me say that there's generally a problem with this area, and it needs more attention from DMV, especially our skills side. There are some projects where military veterans are building houses. In Chetty 419 in Nelson Mandela Metro, there was a military veterans company called Matrosov that was engaged by DHS to build the houses. There have been problems there, essentially the company felt that it committed itself to agreements for delivery which it later found out it couldn't meet. Okay? And in a way that also gets thrown back at DMV, because then DMV gets told, you didn't give enough assistance to this benefit, to this business, which is a business of military veterans. But and I accept that we can give more assistance, but it becomes a difficult issue with DMV in the centre. But I think this is an area which needs more looking at. But also we need to be aware that sometimes trying to build military veterans companies from scratch, at the same time that they must deliver houses, can also lead to delays in housing delivery. I'm not saying that we mustn't do it. I'm just saying it can lead, like all new businesses, they don't all function like a Group 5 or a big construction company in the first year of their creation. And that's kind of what we're expecting many of these companies to do, that they must be formed by military veterans, and then the next year they must build 100 houses. And
I'll respond to that.
Yeah, no. So obviously the other area is more like a PHP process for military veterans, that they build their own houses. And I think we also need more attention to that. I'll leave the question of whether DHS prioritizes military veterans to DG Gianna. Honourable Esso, I think I've addressed the issue of the policy, and as soon as we've signed it off, we can let you have it. There's no problem with that.
Honourable Dumbo.
I would suggest that even before it is signed off, at least must have just to look at it.
I don't mind giving it to you.
No,
as I said, it's out there. But as I said, even with the advisory council, we don't necessarily take every bit of advice they give. Okay?
Yes.
So similarly, with your advice, I'd welcome any comments,
yes.
But don't expect us to implement everything.
Yes.
It's fine.
We
can do that, but in any case, you are going to present it to
yes.
them.
Yeah.
If you need to assist.
Yes,
yes, fine.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
So, Honourable SRU,
I want to have you on. I don't want you off record.
I think I've dealt with the issues of the policies. These issues of when houses were repossessed, whether they're still in people's name, they are also very complex in all the detail when you look at them. And we try to resolve the individual problem. But sometimes we also get to a point where we say that this doesn't meet the regulations and therefore we can't assist. So it's a complex issue, and that's why we have agreed with Human Settlements on the need for overrides on some of these issues, which we have been implementing. I think DDG can talk on that as well. The court cases, let me say that there's a third current court case. There's a case which MKMVA in KZN has brought against the department, which is waiting for a court date, okay? Where the contention of MKMVA in KZN is that the DMV, in terms of the regulations, is responsible for 188,000, okay? So therefore, the top up should be 188,000, and that DHS must still then provide the other 125,000.
That's in the absence of a subsidy.
So the subsidy would then be 188 plus the subsidy. Okay. I'm just saying to you that issue's in court. I've tried to convince them to withdraw the case. I haven't won. So it's a bit difficult for me to go into the detail of it. But basically, when it comes to new houses, our view is that the total amount available is 188,000, and it's broken up down to the, I always get this wrong, 78 from DMV and the rest and the subsidy amount. Okay, but it becomes a bit more complicated when it comes to settling mortgages. And my understanding is at the moment DMV is paying the full amount.
Yeah.
No, we don't get the subsidy from DHS
also
for that.
Also, as per the previous court case.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So, I think I've answered that question. Those who qualify are not on the database. Look, being on the database is changing all the time. People can apply to be on the database at any point in time. When people are not on the database, when they apply for benefit, they're not on the database, they're told by DMV, you're not on the database, this is the process to get on the database. Okay.
How did they get on the housing list?
Well, I don't know. You'd have to tell me which issue you're talking about, okay? I don't know about that. And as far as I'm aware, and the colleagues in the branches know that my firm point of view, and it's in the presentation, you can only qualify for the subsidies and assistance if you're on the database. So I'm not aware of anyone who's getting houses who are not on the database currently, but it might have happened in the past. Okay. Then the issue of ages and whether it's in the policy, as I said, the policy is not finalized. But I actually do think it's an important issue. I think we need to first give houses to the older veterans and then to the younger. But how we also implement that is really difficult.
Who will be the older veterans and the younger veterans? Okay.
Look, let me give you an example, okay, which we're dealing with. I won't say where it is, but Chair, I'm asked to sign off on a list, okay, which has been negotiated with SANVA, with the councillor, with the municipality, with the province, with my department, with DHS, okay? Now, when I look at the list, there are people who were born in 1974, 1975 on that list, which means that in 1990, they were 15 years old, okay? Now, I am very loath to sign such a list, even though it's gone through that whole process. Because I know in the vicinity there are also veterans that are in their 60s or not on the list. But it also gets to a point now, because it's gone through all this consultation, that I'm now the person throwing the spanner in the works. And it's a difficult situation. But I think DMV needs to look at the policy around this thing and how we would implement it.
But would those people have been verified as military veterans
in terms
of your database?
They all appear on the database. But I don't know, once we finish the verification of the database process, whether they would still be there. I'm not going to answer that question. But they're currently on the database.
Could I just follow up?
The
issue of housing, and depends on...
I want you to be on record.
Thank you very much. The housing developments take place at different times in different provinces. And we'd like to see a fair distribution, if it's done proportionally. If the largest amount of military vets come from Gauteng area that qualifies for it, the larger percentage will go to that province. And the smallest one, Mpumalanga, will go to the smallest amount. That is a proportional distribution so that people can get equal access. Is that part of the planning actually that takes place in DMV?
Look, you've seen the table with the targets.
Yeah, we've seen it.
The table with the targets, okay? So that's the target, and that target is discussed with DHS and the provincial department. But now we're waiting for them to deliver actual houses. So in this year, there's 158 or 60 that are ready. Yeah, we're still waiting for 850 or so houses to be built. We can't predict where the houses are going to be built. So basically, at the moment, we respond to when we're told the houses are ready, then we hand them over and pay for them. So, and you'll see certain provinces are much more efficient at building houses than others. So that's where it is at the moment. But yes, we would also like to prioritize the allocation. I think Mr. Gianni
could... It would create a problem.
Yeah.
The distribution is done in that order. Remember, the one for 2-1 is from various provinces, and the distribution cap shows that, in essence, it's quite... in the Eastern Cape, the largest population is 238.
Yep.
In the is a pan-Christian school.
Yeah.
Gauteng, 364 years, quite a century, 93. Limpopo, 121. Umalanga, 312. Umalanga is
smallest.
No, delivering faster.
Oh, delivering faster.
I think Umalanga would have concluded all its backlog.
That's what I'm saying.
Almost.
Now, how would that be perceived by the military victims nationally?
Well, Mpumalanga is the classic case where we need to go and learn how they do things. There's no issues. There's no complaints. People have built their houses, they move into their houses. No problem. So we need to go there and make a case study. What are they doing right, which other provinces are not doing? That's something we need to do. So basically, the distribution cap will go to where the biggest population are.
So it's incentive for performance. You give more to those who perform.
No, we're talking about the 141. Where are they? I'm just stating where they are. The provinces have been given these numbers and the list, and they were told, you go and build where they are. The challenge is what DJ said earlier on.
Mm.
The projects that are running may be far from where the person is, and they are not prepared to.
I did raise that issue with the
Yeah, coming you,
even when you intervene,
sorry,
Honorable Assam, you must press your.
Press the button.
You must intervene on record.
Can I continue and then maybe.
No, I wanted the flow of discussion. I don't mind the flow of discussion intervening, is fine. That's it. It doesn't disrupt, but you must record it. Yeah. Okay, DJ.
Thanks, Jefferson. So then, the Honourable SR raised about the changes to the lists in Sedibeng and Golden Gardens, etc. Those are lists that we're still busy with. But as I've said, they're being consulted at all levels of government. But sometimes it doesn't produce the desired outcome. Okay, so we're still busy with those two. The Western Cape one, the Western Cape one is a bit of a problem for us. To be honest, I've been trying to meet the HOD to discuss it. Basically, the Blue Dance project. The DMV was partially involved in the allocation of the houses there, but the officials of the Western Cape, in a meeting with me, admitted that they did the final allocation of houses. Okay. And it is a skewed allocation. It largely benefits former SACC members. And it creates problems. There's also another problem, is that some of the non-statutory military veterans associations are not happy with the location of the project in Blue Dome. They want houses closer to the city, which is part of what we were talking earlier. Okay, so that's another complication. And then the last complication is we are still waiting for a report from NHBRC on whether the houses that were built meet the specifications or not. There's disagreement on that issue. Okay. So those are all issues we want to resolve. DHS in the province, the provincial department, initially sent us a bill for those houses in the previous financial year. We've then raised these issues. Okay. But they then did not come back to us with a revised form. So we haven't paid for those houses, and that's why they're not reflected in the annual report. And what I'm trying to do now, the annual report for last financial year, what I'm trying to do now is to resolve the issue so we can move forward on this and also move forward with the other projects that they're busy with. From DMV side, our insistence is DMV must be at the center of the allocation of the houses, and the issue of the specifications of the houses is really crucial as well. whether 1421 is realistic. Sorry, the money sitting with the provinces. CFO will respond on that issue, but let me just reiterate. In the last financial year, and in this financial year, and in coming financial years, if I'm still there, we will not transfer bulk amounts of money to provinces. Okay? We only pay once the house on invoice, once the house is completed, and we've done an assessment on the completed house. So all the monies that sit with provinces are from the 2015-16 financial year or before that. CFO will give you the answer on that. I think Mr. Gianni can talk about whether the targets are realistic, the 5,000 and the 1421 for this year. The issue of the location of houses, I think we've said a lot about that. And I think there's more work from us because we've done the mapping, or DHS has done the mapping. We now need to engage with the veteran about where they should be allocated housing. Temporary accommodation or temporary shelter. DMV currently does provide temporary shelter to some military veterans who we've assessed to be at risk and unable to find shelter for themselves. It's a serious problem. It's not currently regulated or in the policy guidelines. It is in the draft policy that we're busy with. But it creates budgetary problems. We end up paying a large amount of money. One of the issues I've been raising with the branch is if we put people in temporary accommodation, there must be a time frame involved. So that those who we're paying for in temporary accommodation should also be prioritized for houses as soon as possible. And it creates a difficulty because sometimes we hear about these things through social workers or other things that, for instance, the military veteran is living on the streets. Then we go and find them, assess them, help them. But they might not be part of those who are on the list to be allocated because we might not know about them, et cetera, et cetera. So it is a serious issue. I think I've dealt with the issue of other models. We've started engaging with Works Formation about building houses, but we've got more discussion to have with them. My own view is I would like to have a SLA with them. I would like them to help us with project management and even, if possible, building houses. The other discussion we still need to have, we've discussed it a bit internally, but we're not quite there, is using existing SANDF buildings for accommodation, using existing public works buildings, also looking at the issue of wellness centers, because for very old military veterans, it's not the best way to deliver services to put them in an RDP house somewhere. It would be better to create like a village or wellness center where they have access to healthcare, because as you get older you need more healthcare. Many of them already need that access. So it would be best to move in that direction, but we've still got more work to do on that. The issue of SANVA, I don't think I have much more to say on the issue of SANVA. I think I've said it. I mean, I'm raising it because of the problem we're facing, and I hope the committee will help in engagements with SANVA about these issues. Lukanji, since going there in February, I don't think we've made much progress in Lukanji. The situation remains the same, and we're all in a corner. I mean, I didn't want to do it in February. I'm not sure that I want to do it now. But what faces us is to really, if we can't resolve the issue by discussing with SANVA, the municipality, the action committee, then we're faced with needing to evict people from houses they illegally occupy and all the consequences which come from that. The the invasion in Durban, I don't have information about that. I know there were invasions, but the problem was, as far as I understand, in Durban, is that veterans were invading houses that were being built for other people, not built for veterans. But we have been working with the provincial department, but I'm not sure about the detail now. I don't know if DHS can help us. Honourable Gamedi, the decreasing number of military veterans. Yes, the number of liberation struggle veterans is decreasing, but at the same time we're getting people from SANDF, and it's quite a significant number of people that are retiring every year from SANDF. So I'm not sure that overall the total number will decrease, but also, to my mind, and this is why we're trying to prioritize NSF members now, if we can provide them with houses and other benefits now, then we might have a different delivery model for people who were in the SANDF. And the pressures are also slightly different. Remember, people who are in the SANDF, they're paying for a pension. Once they retire, they receive a pension, which is not the same situation with former NSF members. So we might have to, once we complete this process, hopefully soonish, then we might have to come to another policy and another delivery model for those who remain. And then you asked about those who are veterans who are not in the database who have force numbers and those who don't have force numbers. There are people in the database who don't have force numbers, and the reason for that is they didn't integrate. You only got a force number if you went through the integration, and then you either stayed in the SANDF or you demobilized. Okay? But there are those who didn't do that process in 94, 95, 96, etc. Okay? So, but they are military veterans, and they're now applying to be on the database, but they don't have a force number, and we can't create a force number for them.
But they had an MK number or APLA number or other number.
There's no such thing. There's either you integrated, like some of us did in 94, 95, we were in NK, we went and we registered as part of the integration process.
Mm-hmm.
When we did that, we got a force number.
Yeah.
So that's it. There are legitimate military veterans who don't have force numbers.
No, but remember, in 1994, when you were integrating, there are some who did not qualify because of age. Because the cutoff age was 35.
That was for special pension.
Oh, that was for special pension.
Yeah. There was no age limit. Okay. Look, there's some people who clearly were armed military veterans. They were trained. For whatever reason, they decided not to integrate. They were either told not to integrate or they decided themselves. There are a few that are still in Zambia and Zimbabwe and haven't even come back. Okay, but so they, to our mind, they qualify as military veterans. They just don't have a force number. What I'm trying to say is that you can be on the database and not have a force number. Okay, and there are some who have force numbers. If they have a force number, then they should be on the database, but they haven't actually registered on the database. So you get both sides of both. Okay? Then you asked about assisting those who failed in terms of the qualification. And as I said earlier, we do try and assist them. I suppose what I need to go and do is have a look at, say, you raised the issue of the invalid IDs. What actually is the case of all 800 of those cases, etc. Okay, and then disabilities. I don't have the numbers, but I think DHS and Mr. Moringa, you can help about houses with disabilities, houses for veterans with disabilities. Okay. And then those who receive BNG houses, can we top them up? To my mind, yes, we can top them up. We just need to go through that. There's also the category of those who own their own houses, have not received a benefit, and need repairs done to their houses, which we're also trying to work with.
Top up or with the full amount?
With the top up at this stage, but that's part of the question that we're trying to do. Chair, those marks, I think the colleagues at DHS and CFO in particular can just add.
Any addition, Aditya?
Thank you, Chair. I've put up that map just for giving the member a sense of how what we've done. The green dots denote military veterans. The red dots denote projects that are running, BNG projects, but government programs that are running throughout the country. You can see where the concentration is, and you can see that's Gauteng. And you can see there's a lot of people there, and then you move to the north, and you can see there's quite a distribution there. KZN, around the table, you can see that close, neat distribution of the green. But equally, you can see how many projects are running where. And that's where the challenge comes in the matching exercise. To then say, if you're in the dot, let's take the Northern Cape. You can see some green dots, and you see no red. Now, will that person want to move to that red dot, which is now alongside Kimberley? Or will they be happy to live where they are? Those are some of the challenges we have to deal with physically in this exercise that we're doing. We have no problem in building for you where you are, if you ask to be done so. So that's an option that's available to each and every member.
Subsidy plus top.
Well, the subsidy is still the same. The DMV confirms that you're a military vet, and you confirm that you are living there, whether it's the chief's place or what, or the right there, we can build you where you are. It's an option that people can take. Secondly, while we went through this exercise, we went to say, Minister, when she made her budget vote speech, and the 499 comes into it, is that I run projects countrywide. Currently, we've got about 9,800 projects running. And some of them are not designed or approved for the military vet house. But they are there. And should a person wish to move there, they can register to do so and be allocated the BNG house, agreeing with DMV, and then a top up will be arranged as to how that will be utilized. But there was a miscommunication when the mention of the top up came. People thought that DMV will be dishing out 78,000 cash. And that needed some further communication between DMV and the members to say it's not the money that you're going to get, but the use of the money for the property. So, as far as we're concerned with the minister, we can allocate all the military veterans today.
Good news.
All we need is Samba and the associations agreeing and signing and saying we're taking the DMG house. That's it. But if everyone, for instance, what complicates the matters was in the Free State, they say they will give a member a 100 square meter house. But we've never seen houses coming up in the Free State in the last two financial years. Because to build a 100 square meter house, you need at least 300,000 rand.
Wow, that's too many cheaper.
Now, that means you're going to disadvantage a number of people to get into the system for a long time to cover everyone on the 300 square meter house. And there was a meeting between Minister and the Premier to find a way of changing that. Because there were two problems there. The Free State was building a 50 square meter house as BNG, where the standard and the regulation is 40 square. And that was filling a big chunk of and therefore not meeting the standard the requirements for most people. Now, it's the same with the 100 square meter. We're not seeing houses coming. Secondly, Limpopo then went and said, we will build 75 square meter houses.
Mm-hmm.
75. And there's no single house that come out of the ground in Limpopo. Because they expect you as a builder or a contractor to use the same subsidy that you are building for
PNG
to then top up and build for someone who is a veteran a bigger house.
Mm.
It's not going to happen. There's no businessman who's going to build for... I can build maybe one house as a donation, but to build 20, 50 houses, adding my money to build for government, it's not going to happen. So there are no houses that are coming up in Limpopo, and only now with the incoming MEC is prepared to sign off and say, we'll build the standard regulated square. No, the standard regulated. Remember, it was a 50 square meter house, which is a standard regulated size and specification for DMV. So that is what we expect of every province to do. But as a first point of entry, especially for those that are desperate and those that are in a situation where you need, instead of temporary, why not move them into a PNG house? If closer to them, and therefore save government money of paying rent and use top up to then make good for whatever. This is where now DG is saying the relationship with SANVA and the structure is critical, because you can achieve all of that with a clear understanding and accepted by everyone on the ground. The first thing people told us late, why should I move to that one when the government is giving me 100? But people are dying without housing. And it seems as if government does not care. Yet government is saying, we have houses, but we are now waiting for a bigger house which is not needed to provide for. But the rest of the country, others are moving in. It's not the uptake is not as what you had hoped for. But the provinces are already gearing themselves for the 50 standard square meter house. In the Northern Cape, I think we're doing fine. The population of the need for non-statutory forces much lesser. I think we're now moving into area that's where the population is. Because the rest of the Northern Cape is like the statutory force member. So we believe we're getting our act together. Only thing we need is, how can we convince
SANVA
that take the PNG house as the first point of entry? If we're to do that, we'll come back here and say there's no one who doesn't have come. But now it will then be the second phase to say, how does now DMV top up? Because their pairs will then be easily stretched. It will actually be easier, because the current one now, even if you build the 50 square meter house, Department of Human Services spends the full amount and claims afterwards. Now, that takes a lot of budget for others. But if the system is correct, then there's no problem, except that DMV has got a budget of 1,000 per annum. We need to deliver 5,000, maybe two times back. That puts pressure on DMV. Because DMV doesn't just deal with this, they also have other problems. So there's those trade-offs that we need to be dealing with. The first one for us will be if everyone will just accept the PNG, we'll move much faster. And then the question of bulk
infrastructure.
The Melmapias project is a case on its own. Would not have had a problem if we did not have a change of government. Unfortunately, when the systems were ready to come into stream and a new government came, then the question of the tenders and who's awarded came in and delayed everything. I think the process is almost completed now. Probably the expectation of the case will flow. The Northern Cape was not a question of no bulk. It was a question of cables being stolen. After you install the cable, somebody smart, they take off the cable and they go and sell it. So you install a new one, they take it away.
But very few people you can find
who could be the same person by taking the cable away. So the bulk issue sometimes is not the planning side, it's is the criminal element in the regime. The invasion in Konovia were not in military veteran houses. It was a normal RDP or PNG program. The invaders claimed they are military veterans. That's the difference.
But in uniform.
No, we had a meeting with them together with minister, and of interest is that all of them claimed that they had served time in prison, in the Westwood prison. They are military veterans that are already criminals. No, we had to do that because we're starving and so on. And so we're not sure whether they are real military veterans, or they were military veterans, or they were
military.
So they can be claimed as well as a military veteran. So we're dealing with all these challenges, and we just want you to appreciate that. Sometimes the program itself is not slow due to lack of effort. It's slow purely on a human element. And if we get around that, it moves. Pumalang again. The political principles for the MEC in this case is hands-on in this program, hands-on. When you phone him, he's not going to say, no, talk to my office. No, I know we're finishing up in Project X and we're busy in Project Y. And we'll be moving, handing over by when. That's how he's taken the project into his arm. Now, if mostly we're getting that from other regions, I'm sure we'll make a huge benefit.
Can we second him, Chair? You can second him.
Yeah, to the hostel, Chair.
Yeah, get the delivery all over.
But I was saying to the DG earlier on, the Premier of the Free State is called for a conference next week on military. And we're praying. I don't know whether we're having the same prayer. But the prayer is that the outcome of the conference is that all military veterans in the Free State will be allocated there. That's all. For us, the only criteria that we have is that by the end of November, all the 1421 either have been allocated a house or a site. That's all. So if that conference achieves that, we then come back to this committee and table the success of this. That's very much. Those are some of the areas.
Thank you.
The training of the veterans from Namia.
The training of the veterans is the competence of CMP. But it's an economic unit. But we also contribute because of the NHBRC training that we offer to those that want to scale in construction and construction management. But we also want a step further through the PHP unit as the champion of the program.
PHP
Dumi is the owner of programming department. We train the guys in Western Cape in cooperative model. Of course, the challenge now is getting them involved in a program or project. And the challenges of the city and the province. On their own. But that model was applied in Czech.
In Czech for now.
Yes. It was also a training class of those two co-ops, form them, establish them, and then they started. So we've done the two. We have not yet had another element coming. I think it's KZN that now requested that we assist them. But they are now carrying themselves to deliver. By the way, they have not delivered these things in case.
They did the policy though.
Since the beginning of the program.
They did the policy.
Except the show.
Yeah.
Which is really, I don't know. It's one of those things we cannot explain ourselves. In Echegwene, you've got over 300 military. In Echegwene, besides going to Tumuza and the other close region. But the standoff between the structures agreeing who has to benefit is amazing.
Wow.
And it's something that delights us. We just don't understand how to go around. Besides the bank, the money to build is there, but there's no agreement as to who benefits. And so...
And also who should build.
And who should build it?
Yeah, that was interesting on both.
Yes, they want to build it. So that's why we have things on arrangement with the co-op.
What
but
is
the co-op is not ready.
What is this building for themselves?
Well, they own a
house.
The
structure of the house.
Building
money,
what does it mean, building for yourself? You mean I take
money,
take their own company.
Become a company?
Oh. No, thank you very much. And I'm closing now. If there's any follow up.
I did say to Mr. Zinski that I would like to respond to the one of the PHP and, of course, the other model that we have of Chetty 491. I did discuss before. Yeah, I mentioned that there's some German lady that's retired, okay, and she's got some and others. They actually build community projects from scratch with donor funding and hand over to the community and train the management to sustain and maintain the buildings. I said that these people actually use people in Khayelitsha that knows absolutely nothing from building, but because she supervises the project from the beginning till the end. And after they finish, they have now developed a semi-skilled and a skilled team from people that build their own homes, and it's a modular block system. It goes very quickly, it's cost-effective, and the people build their own homes. And it takes very quick. Within a month, maximum 6 weeks, and if it's more people, and as I said, there were no skills required. That lady is available to help this department or any other department, any community, because that is their contribution towards the community.
You'll give them the address, the top two, yeah, to see what is doable of doing. It will be between them and whoever it is. Well, that's fine. I think
CFO on the provinces.
Can you do it quickly now?
Have you got the money?
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the model that was used with the provinces, it was pre-payment. As of the end of 2017, we had transferred about 51.6 million, of which we could account for 23.2 million. So immediately the budget unutilized by the provinces is currently sitting at 36.6 million. And hence the comment from the accounting officer to say we have changed the model. It's no longer prepayment, it's delivery and then payment by the DMV. But however, we are tracking all the funds with all the provinces on an ongoing basis. It's unfortunate that Free State, having also noticed that they were delivering 100 square meter instead of a 50 square meter, they have then turned back last month to say the funds that were unused were surrendered to National Treasury. So, meaning that then instead of having a 86.6, we have a 24.4 meter available. But however, we're still engaging with them so that they can give us proof that the funds were surrendered. So basically that's where we're at in terms of the finances.
Thank you very much. Look, it's fine. I hope you are engaging Sanba. And then wherever you need the assistance of the committee, will always be there. They'll be here. Yeah, at a certain stage, you will have to call you and Sanba. And honorable members, we may have to, and we have said it before, we may have to go to these provinces and. Thank you.
look at the project that have been completed, especially those provinces which have performed very well. But those provinces which have not performed well, KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, Limpopo, we need to call those MECs to come here. And then they must tell us what problems are they having and what assistance will they need. Thank you very much. And we are very happy with the commitment from Human Settlement. And from your report, it shows that the commitment is not just fake commitment, it's a real commitment. So the bodies in your court, acting DG, you need to translate or transform this commitment into practical action every time. And honorable members, I suggest that we deal with the committee business in our last meeting, that is on the 29th, because that will be a committee meeting. We'll be closing the committee business for the year, so we will just shift everything to that day, the minutes and everything, but the minutes should be circulated to honorable members. The draft program also should be circulated to
last quarter.
Yeah, honorable members. Our meeting, thank you very much. Our meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very positive. Thank you very much. We start the financial in March. We start in March.
First program of the
Legal opinions on this thing. Basically, they need to first pay off so that they bring it down to 188. Yeah.
So what you think there could be a different loan being made in the wife's name to pay off the amount in the mortgage to 180,000
or whatever,
and then
the application
is because then that is totally the
worst. Look, as soon as it's at 188,000, then we can qualify. That's
essentially. Because I have asked them, please don't approach me because we won't support you anyway.
Yeah.
Is your wife working? Yes, she's got a permanent job. Who's been paying the bill? She has been paying the bill. Without failure, and that's why they're in their home. So I said, well, it's been reported to the department finally, if that is a consideration.
If she can bring it down to 188,000, we don't look at how they bring it down to that amount. What we're going to do is ask the bank, what is the outstanding amount on the loan?
Yeah.
If it's under 188,000, we'll pay it. And then we need to ensure that they get the, what's his name, the deed. I know, but I'm just saying to you, in terms of, even if there's 220,000 outstanding, they still have to bring it up.
Let's have a discussion with the family, explain to them, and tell them, look, if it is somebody that's talking nonsense to you, then of course I tell them, but in this case, I know the bank has actually written a letter to confirm that they pay. for so many years of this.
But that's not going to help me that little.
No,
I mean, I understand.
If they can make such an arrangement, then DMV would assist you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would fail the requirements of that particular benefit.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well,
appreciate it.
Yeah.
1,421 is 421 extra money is here, Paul. Have you got the budget for 421?
What's been done?
Uh-huh. Under the stress. They're using that. Correct.
Thank you.
The of course, the available funds for others.
What's your goal?
Andy?
Yeah, we have a few more, but not too
bad.
Things are bad in Zimbabwe.
Hey, unbelievable.
I saw a picture now of police at the court, all sitting handcuffed on the ground.
It's going to be bad. It's not good for us, but Zimbabwe has also issued a statement.
Oh, really? Our president.
It's not going to be good for us.
Come back to the side. But I know she's got the house at 2 o'clock.
Yes.
I'm saying you mustn't hold me hostage.
Oh, no. I'm doing it in his job. But not as a chef or as an official of the
embassy. Oh, okay.
That's
wonderful. Thanks.
Everything, thank you.